Okay. You can read it in your own time. When you come down to the arcana, it's internalised in terms of good and truth, interior truth joined to that good, and Jacob and Rachel and Laban each have their representations that are... cooperating, you know, processing in a purely internal thing relating to the Lord, relating to spiritual practices and internal development and so on. There's a sort of typical kind of comparison of word explained thing and the arcana on the same passage.
Look at the paragraph numbers too. 577 on the word explained.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So
with the arcana, there's a much more of an outpouring of stuff going on. Whereas 577, okay, he says what he needs to say, and he moves on. You know, because there's only so much perhaps he can say at a particular level.
Nice point. He ran out.
Yes.
He ran out of guesswork.
Yes.
Ran out of ideas.
I mean, he starts the arcana very succinctly.
Well, this is the next sheet.
Yes.
This is the next sheet. And this is the New Century edition of the first volume of the arcana. And when are they going to get round to a volume two? I want to know. But here it is. And I'm not going to read it. You can read it through. And the confidence and assurance of being a conduit is colossal. This is serene in terms of the way it's expressed. And it's cohesive. It's just an amazing thing. Right at the bottom, notice. Now, this is a whammy. Note the remarkable numbering of the arcana, and what it seems to suggest Swedenborg's management of his material. Okay, so when you read the arcana, it will say, as I said in 3629 and 6841.
Yes.
Okay. Just occasionally, and you think, oh yeah, well, he obviously sort of paragraphed and numbered and was that sort of computer. Just occasionally you get the other way round, where he's saying, and I, by the mercy of the Lord, will discuss this later. Okay? As if he knows where it is all going. Okay? Now that's monumental to me. Les Shepherd, if you know Les Shepherd, believes that actually Swedenborg could prefigure his numbers. Now I can only say if he could, you know, in other words, this will come up in 9904.
Well, maybe. I mean, they correspond then to me.
Don't go there.
Numerology, you might find.
Take no. away with you on your anniversary.
On your next anniversary.
But overall, and wonderfully, Swedenborg seemed, like this chest of drawers, Swedenborg seemed to be in command at the arcana stage of what it is, how to say it, and where it's going. And that is, that is true channeling, and it's perfect. It's that sort of perfect thing of nothing is an aberration now. But it's not automatic writing. It's all filtering through the processes of his own ability to understand what he is writing, and that is the boundary and the need to be like that. Otherwise, it's purely channeling.
There's a passage, you know, it talks about the closer angels get to the Lord, the more the stronger their sense of self is.
Yes.
And it's like this process is the same thing, which is what mm-hmm. occurs to me, mm-hmm. like with the automatic writing and that sort of thing. It's very much in that vein of a loss of self in this matter. But then as things begin to open up, as he gets closer to the internal sense, then it's thrown back that he has to use his... the human faculties that are given to us in rationality, and that comes more and more into the plane because it's being regenerated and is able to capture what is of the Lord. And so,
capture it and apply itself to it.
Yeah. So isn't it interesting, though, when if you're not aware of that principle, you would see automatic writing or direct revelation as having more authority than someone who's had to wrestle and work through and cross the word out 15 times to get the right word or whatever in order to produce the final manuscript.
But it is like he had to subordinate his rationality to the revelation.
Yeah, so even...
rather than the other way around, which is the earlier time.
So even in the physicality of written text is the process. It's mirrored. The regeneration process is actually mirrored. In the
So this is opposite to, say... the Buddhist view that you completely lose yourself at union. You're saying this is the opposite.
Yes.
The closer you get, the more of yourself.
Self,
Buddhism, this is
Helmut, self, the Swedenborg latches onto, he doesn't use this phrase, I use it, self, more and more self-individualization. Mm. Okay? That's the paradox. The paradox is, he who loses his life for my sake will find it, Jesus said. Swedenborg says the more a man depends upon the Lord or is closer to the Lord, the more he or she will feel himself to be master of himself, and the more he knows he is of the Lord. Okay? Now that's a heading in divine providence, in one of the laws of providence, where that is a subheading, the amazing thing that the more you depend on the Lord and the closer you are to him, the more you are you.
I sort of like it too. The closer you get to the Lord, the more you see you are other. That's what means that.
And the less you react to fear.
Yes, the trust process.
Going with culture.
Yes.
Doing things because others, what others think, rather than doing what them, because you believe
their confidence, and so on. Yes. What a wonderful state to be in. Not just Swedenborg, but anybody who feels that they are themselves. Can't wait. links to tonight on redemption. Ultimate redemption.
What paragraph number was that?
What paragraph number? Okay. Time. Okay.
Go.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. This is the anti-penultimate handout.
Anti with an E, not with an I.
Yes, not with an I, anti. The third before the last is the anti-penultimate. This is, having given you yesterday Exodus 24 and Jan, I'm sorry,
but,
we went through a biblical chapter and looked at all sorts of ups and downs, actually. So I thought, well, it'd be interesting just to see how... Are you short? Now, this is the one where there are underlinings, if you've all got this. This is a very selective extract of the word explains approach to what's going on in Exodus 24. And again, it's sort of low energy stuff. okay? He's somewhere, but he's not sure about what that place is. Tending to be caught up in numbers, space, time, and so on. But look at the underlinings. This is not yet allowed me to know. This appears to be the case. This is still a mystery to me, for it now appears to me, but to me, though, these matters are still arcane, a mystery. That is, they are still obscure in their most general aspect. Mm-hmm. You know? Classical...
He's feeling his way.
Feeling his way and realising there is more, but I'm not getting it at the moment.
He must have been frustrated. But I guess he is growing, so he would feel that.
Swedenborg as a young man was more than averagely arrogant. Okay? And I think the arrogance, you know, writing home and complaining to his own parents that his allowance was not enough and overdue. And, you know, sort of, you know, do you really love me? You know, pay up, please.
I'll have them prove it.
Yes. And, you know, like David said last night, in command of all the known sciences, I wonder at that, you know, there must have been other sciences he didn't have. All the known scientists, come on. But he might have felt that. He might have actually felt, you know, I'm kingpin here. I know cabinet polishing, and I know astronomy, and I, you know, all this. You know, what a great bloke I am. Okay? And then this process became
humbling,
a humbling process where he became divine-centred.
And as his life changed, as he was going along the spiritual path, when he went through temptation, and then he would it be right to say that he then was regenerated and was at that state of calm and serenity when he wrote? He was then able to start writing the Arcana. It mirrored
when he had regenerated.
Yes,
I
that's what I'm
he
asking.
Had to regenerate before he could start it. Yeah.
I think it would have to be. It couldn't have been purely revelatory in an unregenerated person.
I don't think he could have had his spiritual eyes open unless he was regenerated.
That's right. I have heard Ian Arnold challenge that.
A bit. Yeah. Mm.
And I sort of go along with it a bit, in that I have come across people who undoubtedly have spiritual experience, but don't appear really to be regenerate.
Yeah.
I'm a little cautious. I mean, I remember Mike Stanley as well at college talking about how did Swedenborg get into heaven, and he was suggesting that the heavens came to him, you know, that the angels were presented to him. So,
I mean, what is it to be regenerated? I mean, it's a question in itself. My own view is that what you're looking into is Swedenborg's process of regeneration, and that he was regenerated. Sounds like it's something that it's never completed.
No, so, that's right.
But what you're looking at when you are heaven being open to him, the hells being open to him, the world of spirits being open to him. Well, where are they? Where are those places? Mm. If we call them places, they're his own states. Yeah. He's looking at his own demons.
Yes.
So looking at the angels, you know, the goods and angels are goods and truths. That's what an angel is. It's goods and truths. A demon is evil and falsity. And the process of sorting that you read about in a sort of a historical way, where the last judgment takes place and the world of spirits is cleaned out and the heavens are ordered, that's him.
Yeah.
He's describing his own process, and that's how it is that we can connect with it, because the same process has to take place in every single individual. And it's the understanding of the word that enables that to happen. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how I guess you look at it and say, this is probably where it's different from what I've come across, is that it's the clear recognition of reality. Whereas spiritual experience can actually flatten it.
Yeah. Anything that elevates sensual and corporeal experience, even spiritual things, for me, becomes dodgy because you're relying on the spectacular,
phenomenal,
as a basis for judging level of enlightenment. Whereas what Swedenborg is very simple: enlightenment is knowing the truth, and that's it. Anyone who does that is enlightened. And acknowledging the Lord in that.
And that comes out of the experience of the arrogance. I remember going to the Unitarian Church up the road from Radcliffe on one occasion for a service. I can't remember what it was, but I was standing there having coffee after, and they had this little plaque of, you know, the core Unitarian teaching. And I was really struck about it, that it, they, right at the top there was freedom according to reason, that exact phrase. Mm. But then reflecting on it, I thought, well, the difference between the new church and that is that we would then add an extra clause, which we don't tend to, but freedom according to reason, subject to revelation. Mm-hmm. And that's where I see Swedenborg's being at. And he's sort of gone through that, I can figure it out for myself. That's the freedom according to reason.
Yeah.
And then come to realise that this actually is the touchstone against which all things...
I'm a strong believer that the revelation is only matching the cleanliness, the internal cleanliness or preparation of the individual, because there's the old saying that, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. That refers to the material that you need to whatever experience or... you know, the word or whatever that you need to take the next step. It appears like that all your life.
There was, I think it might have been Mutual in the AC passages, maybe, something about, because even the term freedom is very specifically defined in the writings. Freedom is, I mean, we talk about freedom of choice, but in the writings it's the freedom to know truth and to do good. That's it. That's what freedom is. Because if you're doing that, you're free. You know, you're set free. And so...
Yeah, like that amazing man who managed to do that in the concentration camp.
Victor Frankl.
Victor Frankl, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully you've got a kind of taste of you know, this amazing volume-wise and content-wise word explained. The last two sheets are nothing to do with it. They're actually two pages which link together, and this is Michael Stanley. This isn't mine, but I used it soon after he sort of introduced it to us, and I've kept it so I can offer it to you. But it's a list of 22 illusions or mistakes on reality. Okay? Not in a physical way, one or two may be physical, but in a personal misrepresentation of, you know, your value and so on. And he headed it illusions, and the way in which we, you know, harm ourselves by accepting a wrong interpretation. And each one of those is then given an affirmation of the true reality, or a true reality, connected with it. Now, I'm just going to pick one out, and then I'll just leave these or pass them round, and you're welcome to sort of make the comparison. But the illusion is, and it's a very understandable one, a very sort of compassionate one in a way, the illusion is, I have no right to be happy enthusiastic or joyful in a world that is so full of pain and suffering. I've no right to be happy, enthusiastic and joyful in a world full of pain and suffering. Okay, yeah.
Who's making that claim?
Who's making that claim? Yeah. Anyone could fall into that...
type of thinking.
Yeah, type of thinking.
Okay.
And the affirmation to that is, I have every right to express happiness, enthusiasm and joy, and the responsibility to extend light into darkness. Okay? Mm. Now that's the other way around, which is radically different. And, you know, so they go. I remember 9/11. I remember 9/11.
That's today.
Pardon?
That's today.
The anniversary today.
Is it?
Yeah.
There's a synchronicity for you.
Yeah.
So it is.
Oh, you haven't got such a good memory.
That's amazing.
It's the 11th. You've got a very short-term memory.
It's not been conscious with me this day at all. Mm. By the way, we had an angel service. We had an angel service about 5 years ago, it must have been 5 years ago, I think, when it was a Saturday angel service and the anniversary of 9/11. Okay? And I gave the dozen people there an exercise, and they had a piece of paper and a pencil. Do you remember this, Ruth?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Okay. And I mentioned after this that today, whatever the exercise was, that today was actually the fifth anniversary of 9/11. And Tung, it was, who was here last night, Tung said, my pencil is actually a souvenir from the World Trade Towers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a tiny little stub of a pencil,
mm-hmm.
but at the bottom there was still the Twin Towers.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And that had found its way into, you know, divine dangled carrots.
There's the sense of humour.
That's right.
Sense of humour.
So, illusions and affirmations. And remodelling your personal picture of reality in a always positive approach. Positive, enriching, beneficial approach by seeing the affirmation behind or as contrast to the illusory way that we can any time fall into thinking about, you know. Somebody comes up with a brilliant comment and we say to ourselves, you know, we say it ever such a lot sometimes, how dare they? I wish I'd said that. I could never have said that. I haven't even thought that. Therefore, I'm a nobody. You know? This sort of internal dialogue thinking, which is pushing us back and down from being able to actually relate to life. Okay, well, we must stop, but that's taste of the word explained. There it is. If you want to just have a look through, I'd seriously recommend taking the introduction on your honeymoon. Your holiday. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'll pass the illusions around. Oh, yes, I'll pass illusions around.